Have y'all seen the Kung Fu robots?
Yeah.
They're really crazy. The reason that the robots are getting better is because they put an LLM in the brain of the robot. The robot is able to get better by analyzing the scene with words and telling its hand to go a little bit to the left, which is a very, very different situation than we were in before.
All that and more on today's Mixture of Experts. I'm Tim Huang, and welcome to another thrilling episode of Mixture of Experts. Each week, MOE brings together a group of the smartest, sharpest, cleverest thinkers we can find who are working at the frontiers of artificial intelligence to make sense of the week's news. On this week's episode, we've got Marve Univar, Director, Agentic Middleware and Applications, Research AI, Martin Keane, Master Inventor, and Olivia Buzek, Staff AI Engineer. We've got a packed episode today. As always, we're going to talk about the new Anthropic Institute, Shopify getting into agentic shopping, news that OpenAI might be in the middle of a pivot. But first, I want to start today by talking about the big conference of the week, which is NVIDIA GTC. This is the big NVIDIA conference that happens once a year where NVIDIA and Jensen Huang get to come out on stage and announce all the things that are happening with NVIDIA. It's a little bit of a ridiculous set of headlines coming out of this conference. So at the conference, Jensen mentioned that he sees $1 trillion in orders for Blackwell and Vera Rubin systems through 2027. So I think we're past the $1 billion mark with NVIDIA. Now they start talking a bit with trillions. And a huge number of sort of announcements. I think the really kind of key theme, though, that I want to maybe start with, and Olivia, I'm curious if you have any views on it, was, you know, they seem to have kind of fully bought in to say agentic AI is really going to change what we need to do on the hardware side, which I think was one of the most interesting kind of aspects of all this is, you know, we've come to know them very much as like, well, you do the big GPU build-outs and data centers. But it seems like even like now, like the software is almost kind of like the upstream thing. It's forcing Jensen to kind of change what he needs to do. So curious about what you think about all that.
Yeah, so I do think that's really interesting. So just so folks know, I've been here at NVIDIA all week and hearing how people talk about it. And mostly we brought a bunch of agentic AI stuff to the show floor to help people get to a better understanding of it. I think the big thing with agents, as of like a few months ago, saying that agentic AI was going to take everything was, you know, it was the buzzword last year, but it sort of didn't mean anything yet, right? Like the models weren't quite there in terms of being able to automate things in this unsupervised way. Now, you know, there's at least a few systems that you can log into and basically not only can you ask the main agent to do things, but it can launch sub-agents, and you don't even necessarily, so as of, you know, 6 months ago, if I wanted to build an agent, it was a whole thing. It was, a complicated layered system. But now at this point, I can say, hey, spin off 50 agents, and I want half of them to do web research, and some of them should be testing my code. Oh, and by the way, a couple of them should be like synthesizing results on this monitoring job that I want you to do, and just go do that for me. So the amount of sub work that you then create, like each one of those is an entire LLM that's being run behind the scenes. So that drives up the compute exponentially relative to the amount that you would use normally. I think that is an interesting development. I don't know if it's good or if it's bad yet. Obviously, there's a lot of implications depending on how you feel about it. But I do think what that means is if people are starting to do that, and granted, right now, I think mostly specialists know about those types of behaviors. But I think it's completely reasonable for us to imagine a world where, people actually are doing those sorts of things on a regular basis. They are spawning several different agents to do their bidding. And if that's the case, then they need the compute to back it. And so specializing the compute, making it so that a lot of that stuff can happen on a, you know, either a single chip or a single stack or whatever, makes a lot more sense than trying to spread all of that all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, definitely. And Marve, I know you spend a lot of time thinking about agents, agentic middleware. Curious what you saw kind of in the GTC announcements, anything kind of intriguing or surprising to you. I think to Olivia's point, Yeah, I just think about, like, I was joking right before we started the recording, you know, I have so many tabs open on my browser. It feels like we're going to get there with agents as well, where it's like, where did I put that agent that's supposed to be doing that for me? So,
I mean, I think it's closer than you think. But what caught my attention is the NemoClo announcement. As OpenClaw is something that I work very closely with, and I think OpenClaw could have done those things, but could have done other things that you wouldn't want. So for the folks who don't know, NemoClo is the NVIDIA's enterprise-grade AI agent platform built on top of OpenClaw. And OpenClaw is the, since February, I think, like whoever is in the agentic world, I think is probably paying attention because it's the fastest growing open source project in history. But it had serious security problems. At a level that, like, I wouldn't feel comfortable putting it on my local machine and run it on my, you know, private personal data. But why this is interesting is, like, the things, like, now NVIDIA took this and made it, like, okay, put some security constraints and controls. But the things that make OpenClaw dangerous are at the same time the things that really make it useful. So, like, accessing to all your apps or the file systems, like persistent memory, integrating with every single app you use is, like, basically that's what makes OpenClaw interesting and a very capable assistant. And NemoClo is basically sandboxing and giving the permission controls, yada, yada. Genuinely, it's helpful, especially for enterprise applications, but basically it's like a leash. The whole point the OpenClo went viral is, like, this independency. So I don't know, like, where NemoClo is gonna take this OpenClo game. But, like, and I think Jensen kept making the Linux analogy, like Linux became the enterprise safe through, but it is not like OpenClo is just a few months old, right? Like, the Linux went through years of, you know, hardening, decades almost, right? Like, commercial distributions like Red Hat and had mature governance. And NemoClo is an alpha software. I wanted to try it, and I'm like, okay, I have to set up a virtual machine before I try it because it's an alpha. I don't know, right? So it's interesting to see where this is going to go. And NVIDIA moving up the stack from infra layer to basically getting to the agent control layer is also another interesting point, because now this is like an agentic operating system war, right? Like, and who is going to play there is going to be an interesting thing to watch.
Yeah, Martin, that was actually the question I was going to bring up to you. And, you know, Marve set me up really nicely on it, is just, you know, we think about NVIDIA as a hardware company, a GPU company. And of course, they made all the announcements. There's this new Kyber platform that's coming out that's going to be even bigger and more powerful than the last platform that they had. But it does seem like it's interesting that the focus of this year's GTC is very much like their movement on the software side, right? And so, I don't know, should we be surprised that they're moving in that direction? Like, again, this is a hardware company at the end of the day, isn't it?
I feel like every time that I come on this podcast, we're talking about some astronomical number that they have just, you know, released. So, you know, the big kind of business thing was their year-on-year quarterly revenue was up 77%. Like,
on a base that was already enormous, to be clear.
Yes, yeah. Because the previous 11 quarters, the revenue growth has been over 50% every single time. So, I mean, these are just like crazy numbers.
Yeah, yeah. And I laughed when I saw the $1 trillion number. I was like, what are even numbers anymore? But sorry, Martin, go ahead.
Right. And then you got the keynote. So Jensen Huang's up on stage and, you know, going through some of the hardware stuff. But then 2 hours later is still up on stage talking about, oh, by the way, there's this NemoClo thing. And, oh, remember when we bought Grok for $20 billion in December? Here's what we've got going on with that. And, oh, we're doing some level 4 autonomous vehicle stuff with a bunch of car companies with the NVIDIA Drive Hyperion program and stuff like that. The number of things going on is just mind-blowing, just to keep track of it all, let alone actually run this as a business. And Oliver, it sounds like you're at GTC right now, and I'm kind of curious what your experience has been like. Like, is it just like super scattershot with so many things going on? Are people able to keep up?
Absolutely. I mean, it's huge right now. Like, and everybody has brought the same things, but a little bit of different things. I think my big thing, and the thing I haven't seen talked about in a lot of the announcements, is NVIDIA has a lot of stuff with robots going on. I don't know. Have y'all seen, like, so, okay, I don't think this was actually NVIDIA itself. Have y'all seen the Kung Fu robots?
Yeah.
They're really crazy. anyway, anybody who's listening, go look up the Kung Fu robots. It's really crazy. Look up the difference between the 2025 ones and the 2026 ones. And I was at PyTorchCon this last August when NVIDIA brought an explanation of what they were doing with robots. And what they explained is basically the reason that the robots are getting better is because they put an LLM in the brain of the robot. So it used to be just visual language models, and then it started being large language models that are making a big difference. And, you know, it means now that the robot is able to get better by analyzing the scene with words and telling its hand to go a little bit to the left, which is a very, very different situation than we were in before. Yeah, I think not only are there layers and layers of what NVIDIA is doing that we've already talked about, there's also all these other layers that they're pushing into as well. So they're a little bit everywhere. And yeah, very much the conference, you can see that, you know. I did see a robot on the floor the other day. It was not that fancy a robot, but it was a really cool robot.
Yeah, I think it's like there's two views. One view is like, well, are they kind of spreading themselves too thin? On the other hand, it's like if you have $1 trillion, like you can afford to be spread everywhere, right? It's just like, yeah.
Yep, exactly.
Well, I'm going to move us on to our next topic. This is a story that kind of came out, announcement through Anthropic. Anthropic will be announcing and launching something they're calling the Anthropic Institute. It's going to be led by co-founder Jack Clark, who's going to be assuming a role as Anthropic's head of public benefit. And sort of the way they frame up what this new institute's going to be for is the idea that, look, AI is going to change society from their point of view, and they are going to increasingly need to kind of tell the world about what Anthropic is learning as AI transforms the world. And so it looks to be a super interesting kind of collection of researchers from different disciplines. And I think, in effect, what it is we're creating a unit to even figure out what our technology is really doing to society. Marv, I'm kind of curious about what you think about this. I mean, you know, I guess the skeptic might say, this is just marketing. But do you see anything further than this? Like, I'm curious about how you kind of read, like, why would they even need to have something like this?
I think I have mixed feelings. Like, I like the fact that this is co-founder involvement. They bring all these diverse backgrounds and independent, I think, non-anthropic, I think, leaders to come lead this effort. But I think the harder question here is, like, can you build and study simultaneously? Like, can you be the honest auditor of your work to see what's impacting? Like in the history before, like, you know, we had, you know, tobacco industry funding the health research, right? Like, or the fossil fuel industry funding the climate science. And in these cases, like, research was real. Like, people were funded to do research, but the institutional incentives shaped which questions get asked. So this is not like, I mean, this is a great, I think, initiative from Anthropic, not an acquisition, but it's still also like, there's some skepticism I have. Like, is this going to be asking the right questions? Like, they're going to influence the questions being asked. And as you said, I think this is like Anthropic is essentially saying, like, we don't really fully know what we're building, which sure. Is going to impact, right? Like, this is the honest answer. And I think, like, no one, like, I think neither regulators, not economists, like, they don't know, like, an AI is capable hitting the many labor markets at the same time, right? Like, it's not only legal systems, like, not labor only, or, like, democratic institutions, right? Like, the countries simultaneously. So I think it's an attempt to build understanding in real time from the inside, like what's happening. I think it's also like, this is reassuring to me. Otherwise, like the terrifying aspect would be like, if, you know, if they pretended that they knew know what the implications would be and there's no research behind it, right? So it's an honest alternative. So I think like I lean towards like, I want to see like what this research institute is going to do and how they're going to study. But it's pretty new and there has been, I think, efforts. So in the past from other companies too. So we'll see.
Martin, it's a really kind of hard problem. I mean, I had some of the same kind of feelings as Marva did, which is basically like, well, it's good that we're trying to understand what is happening, but also it's like, can you do that research and execute at the same time? And I guess what it sounds like from the blog post is, you know, what Anthropic would tell you is, well, we're really well positioned to do this because we see everything, right? Like, we build the systems, we have all the data on usage. That allows us to say things about what's happening in AI that no one else might be well positioned to talk about. Do you buy that argument?
Yeah, I think like the more cynical among us, there might be a bit of eye rolling here where you hear that, oh, the AI lab is going to create an institute to make sure that the AI lab's being safe. Like, yeah, that's a bit of a vested interest in that. But I mean, the interesting thing that I saw from their announcement was they said that the Institute has a unique vantage point, and that unique advantage was that they have access to information that only builders of frontier AI systems possess, and it intends to take full advantage of that. So it's kind of interesting. Like, they obviously know more about their models than we do. And also, Anthropic have been a leader in the space of interpretability for years. They've been very open about trying to understand what's going on in their models. I mean, my favorite example still is an earlier version of Sonnet, where they just kind of tweaked a few weights and created what they called Golden Gate Claude, which was where this thing was obsessed with the Golden Gate Bridge just by tweaking some weights. And what that resulted in is a large language model that no matter what you asked, if you asked it for a recipe for cookies, it would somehow work in the Golden Gate Bridge into the conversation. So this is an area that they have been very open with. And it was interesting to see how they set this institute up, where they kind of put into three pillars. You've got the red teaming pillar where they're kind of stress testing, which I might imagine they're already doing a lot of that. But then there's a pillar that is looking at societal impacts, and then the economic research, which is specifically tracking jobs. And, you know, the CEO has been very open about saying the impact of where they think this is going and the impact it's going to have on jobs in the next coming years. So as eye-rolly as I was when I initially saw this announcement, I do think because it's Anthropic and they do have this history of being quite open about this, that this could be something to keep an eye on.
There's a role for research institutes controlled by large AI labs. I do want to see, I think there's a responsibility we all have as AI engineers to make sure that we are having those conversations and thinking about those things. I also think that those research labs need to collaborate with those more independent ones in order for us to have a complete and total conversation in this field around what responsibility looks like. I don't think that. So it remains to be seen which way they actually go. But I'm really hopeful that they decide to be good players in the research sphere and take into account what's coming from a lot of the independent places as well.
I guess in that, this is sort of one thing I did want to touch on before we move to the next topic is like, in some ways, is it kind of funny that they're only doing this now? You know, like, I guess there's a part of me that's kind of like, you guys are building this, but you have no idea where it's taking us. maybe in some ways, like, this announcement is kind of coming a little bit later than we would have wanted, because understanding these effects would have been something that you would just like hope the company would be working on. And I think, I don't know, it's sort of, I guess, a funny aspect of sort of the current wave of AI that it seems like even the leading people in the field are like, I don't know where this is all taking us. I don't know, Olivia, maybe just since you had the last comment, is like, should we be concerned that no one seems to know where we're going?
Right? Yeah. I mean, you know, you get on the bus on a cross-country trip and you say, so, hey, where's our, you know, or is this our destination? And they go, I don't know.
I have no idea.
See how things go. You know, we're just driving. What are you talking about?
Sure.
So I do think it is, it is and it isn't concerning, right? So I think that I appreciate people's reluctance to state a strong truth, because I was just reading Dario Amodei's essay about where he, this was, I think, back in October 2024, about how he sort of thinks about the future. And he talks a little bit about how AGI in particular is not something that he necessarily thinks is a useful term, but what happens with the emergence of powerful AI and things like that. And so I appreciated in that his restraint in saying, like, this is exactly what will happen. Because there is another vein of thought that's very common in the AI space that's like, the singularity is coming. These things are definitely going to replace you. And this is how the economy will be and things like that. And, oh, by the way, we will have no need for the legal profession anymore because it's all going to be done by AI and things like that. And what it reminds me of, so, you know, back when I was in grad school, there was this joke about how computer scientists, you know, you get really clever in one discipline, and computer scientists in particular really like to think that they are also really good then at other disciplines and submit to like physics journals saying, I apply to computer this and I've made this grand new physics result. And it's not the case that that's never true, right? But there's a hubris to the field, basically. So I think I want to see balance in that, right? So there's a little bit of that tendency towards hubris. And so I do want people to restrain their, I'm going to tell you how society works because I have built this cool language model thing. But at the same time, I think because we have this role of guiding what that future looks like, telling people where the bus is going would really help.
Maybe just at least where we're going to be in the next 5 minutes or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, Martin almost builds on your observation from the last topic, which is like you know, GTC seems like NVIDIA is going everywhere. You know, there's one point of view, which is like, they have some n-dimensional chess master plan they're pursuing. It may just be that even they kind of don't know, right? Like they have $1 trillion, but they also don't really know where this is all going.
I think it's worse even than like not knowing the roadmap and where things are going. Like the frontier AI models today do not fundamentally understand how their AI models work. Like you cannot trace from an input token through to the output token and know how that model arrived there. So when you don't even know how the stuff works today, forecasting what's going to work in like a year's time, I can see that being a bit difficult.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a weird feeling. But it's good. And I think, to the points that have been made so far, I think it is exciting to see them not just using computer scientists, right? That I guess they could have done a version of the Institute, which is like, well, we took a bunch of engineers and they're going to tell us about this. They do seem to have kind of an openness to, you know, all these other disciplines that might have kind of relevance to, you know, navigating this or at least letting us know which bus we're on and then maybe get to the question of where the bus is going. So. I'm going to move us on to our next topic. This was a sort of fun announcement. So, you know, we've talked a lot about in the past episodes of Mixture of Experts about about agents and shopping agents in particular, you know, talking a little bit about what Amazon has done in the space. And so this one kind of was a headline that caught our eye. Shopify, the kind of distributed e-commerce application and platform, announced through its president, Harley Finkelstein, that basically they're about to make a big push into like shopping agents. And the vision is actually that you will have agents that will be sort of personal shoppers. You'll say, hey, this is the kind of thing I want. And the agent will go out there and do your discovery and buying and comparing of products for you. And so, Marvin, maybe I'll kick it over to you. You know, the first thing I immediately thought about is like, well, Shopify is like a very different kind of business from a platform like Amazon. And that might mean that the agents look really, really different. But I, you know, again, don't really have a sense of this because I'm not working at it day in, day out. So kind of curious if like that hypothesis rings true to you or if you do feel like kind of actually shopping agents will be sort of uniform across the whole kind of e-commerce world.
So I believe like it's just like, you know, how when GPT, you know, was launched, it changed our expectations of search, right? Like agentic shopping, I think, will genuinely change the consumer experience. And it's going to be somewhat, I think, converge because the consumer is the common, you know, or the person who wants to buy something is the common denominator here. So, but I think like this is just feels to me like an extension of an existing Gen AI use case is not something fundamentally new, like to do in the, the core pitch of, I think, Shopify was to, it was genuinely compelling, but it's really just a natural next step of personalization that's been progressing for 20 years, like Amazon's recommendation engine or Google Shopping. What is going to be interesting here for, I think, Shopify is, like, as you said, they're distributed, so they don't really own a platform or single merchant. So this is going to probably democratize or make it like a little bit more interesting if you enable maybe agent-to-agent commerce. And it's going to be hopefully normalizing, like not, you know, promoting what's in the, you know, sponsored products or the, you know, Amazon's Prime, like in the Amazon case. But what I found interesting, the more I thought about it, like is the if agents are gonna, you know, act on behalf of users to go do, you know, purchasing decisions, like what's going to happen to a brand? Like there is like I think like the role brand plays here is like the storytelling, emotional, you know, purchases. Like brands have always been partly about bypassing, you know, the rational decision making. And they create desires, and agents will basically optimize on your, you know, whatever you want to, you know, optimize the cost and the performance and the past history, et cetera. So you will be not discovering things you didn't know you wanted to buy, right? Like that's going to be interesting. Like it's, I think, going to be consumer experience will be different. But other than that, I think this is a natural extension of the personalization use case that is now going to be powered by agents. That's my, I think, take.
Yeah, definitely. So there's a lot of parts to that that I want to unpack. You know, first, let's just pick up on ads. I think that's in some ways like one of the most intriguing things you're putting out is, you know, a little bit like how, you know, Model Context Protocol, MCP, is like a system where you access a website, but there's also like a version of the website that's like kind of for the agent. I actually wonder in the future whether or not you'll have advertising for humans and then like advertising to agents will almost become its own like market, right? Because like now I don't have to persuade the consumer. I just need to persuade the agent that's shopping on behalf of the consumer. Is that, I don't know, Olivia, I see you nodding. That feels like very sci-fi to me, but it feels like a very obvious next step of where this is all going.
Oh, it's a very obvious next step. I think that's the whole thing. Like, you know, I was reading the article that you'd posted about this and, you know, the way that the Shopify CEO describes it, he's basically like, oh, yeah, this is going to be an authentic shopping experience. Uh-huh. It's going to be so great. So
cynical.
Maybe it's like that today, right? Like, so I have used like some of the consumer grade chat models in order to do some product comparison. The reason that works right now is because there's a trove of Reddit data and forum data and whatnot that is accurate for the products today. But the problem with all of these, and I think the problem we collectively have to solve as a field, is the hollowing out of those knowledge resources. And if we are not careful about this, they will be replaced by ads and it will be exclusively ad-based content. And then your thing can't possibly give you good recommendations when the only content out there is marketing-based. So then, you know, it degrades the quality of the agent simply because the information isn't there. That hasn't yet, I mean, arguably to a degree that has happened with the shopping experience already, even pre-generative AI, but not to the degree that you will see. And we can see an example of this happening already. I don't know if y'all have seen the Stack Overflow data. So Stack Overflow, for anyone who's listening but isn't a computer engineer, is where we all share our information about how to code. Stack Overflow was the place to be for most of the 2010s if you were a coder. And it was, you know, pretty steady in popularity. It was never all of the developer population, but there was a good 5 to 10% of developers that were on there, like helping glue the community together, making sure that we had the information we needed so that we could all do our jobs super, super well. Nobody's on it anymore. I mean, I'm sure that there's a couple diehard enthusiasts, but if you look at the usage graph, it's like it started, it took off, went to 10x, went along for several years, and then just dropped right back to where it was before the jump. That means that as coders, we no longer have that source. So let's say I'm using an open source library and I want to know, is it getting better? And what are the latest versions of it? Increasingly, I can only rely on the documentation and what gets posted on issues by agents rather than things that are coming from other developers who are dealing with the same problems that I am and have solved those problems. So translate that over to our agentic shopping world. If you hollow out the pieces in the first place, so you know, news organizations not being able to post reviews because they're no longer being able to monetize the content because the ones reading it are exclusively agents, means that the quality of the information that's available degrades. So we have to solve that problem. And this is why I think a lot about, like, yes, as AI engineers, we actually have a role to play in that. We could build systems. I haven't seen anyone yet say, hey, my next startup is going to be like the treasure trove of information. I'm going to make the agents share information publicly with each other. I'm going to keep the old internet alive, the concept of the web alive, so that things can keep working in the future, like that we have to make that investment. And I certainly don't see any of that coming from any of the frontier AI labs. You know, people have all these other like risks about very serious concepts, and that's fine. But there's like this real basic concept that I need to see someone address.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and it's almost like it's sort of going to be a weird outcome potentially if the industry doesn't take up that responsibility. Because, like, I mean, just put it in the context of shopping, Olivia, sort of what you're saying is if I'm asking about a product that was made anywhere before the release of ChatGPT, the agents will do a really good job of identifying, sifting through those products. But if I ask about a product that came out after that period, it may just not be as good at doing it, just because the root data is not as good, right? Like that, there's been this deterioration in the source. Martin, that's a doomsday scenario. Do you buy the doomsday scenario?
Yeah, I mean that totally makes sense. Yeah. I'm really interested to. I'm really interested to see what this Shopify kind of storefront experience would look like, when we're talking about something that's optimized for an AI agent. Because if you think about what a storefront looks like today, it's optimized for different things. It's optimized for search engine optimization, so that your storefront shows up on Google, and then it's optimized for user experience. So you've got the human eyeballs on this storefront now. So we need things like an attractive banner image. I mean, does that matter to an agentic shopping agent, how attractive the banner image is? Or it's going to use some sort of psychological nudges. Like if you're selling a subscription, you might have three tiers of subscription and you want to kind of nudge people to take at least the middle tier of the subscription by making the lower tier look a little bit insufficient, but if you just had a bit more money, you could spend it on that one. Again, are those kind of psychological nudges going to work with an agentic system? I think what a storefront that works well with an agentic system today would actually be optimized for are things like computer use. Like, agents are pretty clumsy when they're navigating through. So, you know, if I give Claude access to my Chrome browser and it can load some websites and kind of scroll around and stuff. But there are certain UI elements that trip it up. It has trouble finding information that is, for example, collapsed in and needs to be expanded, stuff like that. So does a Shopify storefront that is optimized for an agent get rid of the banner image, get rid of all of the psychological nudges, and get rid of all of the UI elements that are kind of tripping it up so that it's more easily able to navigate the system and get the information out?
Yeah, it will be a funny outcome if in the future, like you want to do it the old fashioned way and you actually go to the website and you're like, this is terrible. I can't use this at all because it's been like fully optimized for agents to trawl. Like that'll be a very strange feeling, I think. Marvin, maybe a last question here for you is, do you think that Shopify or even a company like Amazon has a fighting chance here? Because I think that one obvious thing to say to this kind of announcement is, well, we're already going to have shopping agents. They're called ChatGPT or they're called Claude. And so like this kind of Shopify agent in some ways is kind of like arguably something that competes for user attention and adoption all against like our general purpose agents that are increasingly going to be working with us. What do you think? Like, do you think that Shopify like has leverage here to carve out a path, or is it really hard to see them competing against, you know, the big tools, I guess? So.
Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned at the beginning, like, I don't think this is going to be a big, you know, fundamental thing. I know they are the second largest, you know, the e-commerce platform, so they have that. But they don't have, for example, like Amazon has their own data, right? Like over the years of like, you know, users coming, like, because it's proprietary and it's from their platform. So if anything, I see like Amazon type or Google, right? Like Google has a lot of ad and sponsored, you know, data that may put them on edge. Shopify, yes, it's their distributed, but distributed to many, right? Like, I don't know if they can leverage that to their advantage. Otherwise, as you said, Tim, I think this is going to be yet another, you know, agentic experience for the consumers. And we all now got used to, right? Like, looking our flights or the, you know, the weather from either Claude, you know, chat or ChatGPT. And it is like, it has changed. And I think that's going to be still be the entry point for the consumers. If they can integrate well their shopping agents with these, I think, entry points and leverage the data that they have, maybe they may differentiate. But yeah, I don't think this is going to be a very big, you know, a fundamental shift for the shopping experience or the industry.
We're going to move to our last story of the day. And actually, it's sort of interesting. This show has ended up being the "Are they spreading themselves too thin?" Episode. It seems like we've hit on that theme over and over again. And this final story is no exception. So the Wall Street Journal exclusively reported this week that OpenAI was readying a big strategic shift in the operations of the company. And what is rumored to be on its way is the idea or recognition among OpenAI's leadership that the kind of, quote, do everything all at once strategy is not working for them. And what they're going to do, and we'll see how this plays out, is to refocus the company specifically around coding and business users. So this is a pretty big shift. I mean, as someone who, you know, loved their short form video product, Sora, and a whole host of other things that they've done over the last, you know, few years, this is like a pretty big shift. This is basically almost a recognition that enterprise is going to be the future of OpenAI. Olivia, thoughts? Discuss.
This may have changed this year, but in the last couple of years, at least, every summer, ChatGPT usage gets posted and it goes, and it's because all the students go away and they stop using ChatGPT for things. So I think, you know, what I've read from a lot of the percentages is like there's a lot of market penetration of things like ChatGPT, Claude, et cetera. But most people are doing like a query every couple days or something like that. It's not like really worked into their workflow. And so it's not totally surprising to me. Like in the history of AI, it has never happened that AI advancements suddenly managed to penetrate all corners of society immediately. In the history of technology, that has never happened. And so I don't think it's viable for most companies to aim for, we're going to take the consumer market as our first market for an AI product. Like, yes, ChatGPT has been a big darn deal. Everybody's paying attention to it. All of this matters. But there's some diminishing returns involved until and unless everybody can really understand how to use these tools well, because they are fundamentally tools that you need to have skills in order to make good use of. And so what that means is that specializing in the places where, first of all, where models do well, where there's populations of people who are predisposed to be able to think about these complex problems, it's going to be it's going to work a lot better, and where there's like an incentive to use them. And I think, you know, coding, enterprise, there's obvious incentives. There's a reason that, you know, everybody is talking about this for code and less so for other things.
As a consumer user of these products, I am a little bummed to hear that they are no longer servicing me. We're also talking a little bit to Olivia's last point about kind of like when the VC subsidization of the product is going to end. Because one of the reasons I love using it as a consumer is I know that even though I have a pro subscription, I pay a lot of money for the subscription, it is still an incredible deal relative to the amount of money that OpenAI needs to spend to service my application or my user account. And so I don't know, is I guess the question for you, Martin, is like, do you think like the music is kind of stopping on the consumer experience of this tech? And like, they will say, hey, if you really need this, you're going to have to pay us like, you know, however much, hundreds of thousands of dollars to get access to it.
Yeah. I mean, how do most of us know OpenAI? I mean, from the ChatGPT launch, right? I mean, I was using their models prior to ChatGPT, and I was subscribed to their Discord server. And every time they had like a new announcement, like we've updated the training data, or we've added a few more billion parameters to our model, they would send like sort of a general announcement that go to everybody. And just one afternoon, they sent this general announcement that, oh, we've added this chat interface now to our model. And it was like such a meh kind of moment. Like, to think that 1 year later, that just kind of nothing announcement would mean that my mother not only knew what ChatGPT was, but she was using it daily to help with her recipes. I mean, it just never felt like that would be the moment. But it you know, this became their big thing, and it started them on this journey of very much consumer focused. And they've been working on other things, trying to recapture that moment. And in some ways they have, like the image generation that they first started to bring out. That was a huge deal when that came out. Then, as you mentioned, Tim, Sora and Sora 2. Well, when Sora 2 came out, that racked up 1 million downloads in the first 5 days, which was more than ChatGPT. But it was so transient. Like, I don't know anyone who's doing Sora stuff anymore and watching these AI-generated videos. And it was all you could see for a little while. Same with the image generation. It was just constant image generation on social media, and now it's nothing. So I think what they've started to see with the consumer stuff is it does move so fast. It is super transient. You get a big bump, and then it's on to the next thing. Whereas if you're looking more at these sort of corporate business contracts, you're looking at agentic coding and so forth, which, you know, that's been where Claude has done so well, that is a market that once you tie people into it and they're kind of hooked, well, they're going to keep coming back with these big contracts. And it's not going to be the $100 plan if you're doing this at a corporate scale. It's going to be a lot of money. So it is a shame, though, Tim. I totally agree. I mean, I love things like the advanced voice mode coming out and how fun that was, and all of those things. So it will be kind of a shame if we're just focusing on models that are improving their benchmark scores on coding benchmarks and so forth from now on. But I sort of get it.
Yeah. Marve, so I think the cheeky response to this headline is you look at the strategy and you're like, they're going to focus on coding and enterprise. Coding enterprise. Is this just the Anthropic strategy, right? Like, in some ways, I think this is like kind of a funny thing that like we have another player that has already been focusing on the strategy. It's Anthropic. And so I don't know, is this almost a bit OpenAI conceding the battle to basically say, actually where the money is going to be made is what Anthropic is doing and we got to get in there. Is that how you read the news?
Yes. Like to me, it's like if they're making this decision, like as we hear, I think they're making the right strategic call. Or like my question would be, did they wait too long like to switch to code than the consumer? Because in enterprise AI, like even within my teams, like this is what I experienced, like the coding agent isn't just one product category. I think it's the entire foundation for the relationship that you have with the enterprises. Like if you lose the developer, you lose the platform. If you lose the platform, you lose every single upsell opportunity to any other AI application or workflow that enterprise will eventually buy from you. So OpenAI built ChatGPT into consumer-first approach and assumed enterprises would follow with all these, you know, nice features that they kept introducing. But Anthropic went to the other direction. And as I think Martin was saying, like the developer preferences are much more stickier than consumer ones. And once an engineering org has built internal workflows like around the coding agent and trained their like team to use it, changing this is going to be big like sales cycle from OpenAI's perspective. So I think Anthropic, as you said, read the market better than ChatGPT or OpenAI and started from the right place. And I think OpenAI is following. As like, again, like I don't know, like do you guys think OpenAI has a potential to win? Did they wait too long? It's not, I think the product is not strong. I think Codex is great, but the challenge is I think developer community has already, I think, formed their loyalties around this coding platform. So I don't know. I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah, I simultaneously think that's true. Like I do see people starting to develop their loyalties to a particular platform. And I also think that none of these coding platforms have much of a moat yet. At best, they have a set of skills that it does particularly well. So like, Claude Code superpowers types of things. And so you can now, you know, mostly trust Claude Code to do a good job at like reviewing things. But that's going to be table stakes. Within months, that'll be table stakes, right? So it won't take long to replicate those features. Nothing that any of them have put out so far is completely non-replicable by the other labs. And there's no stickiness, there's no network effects. If you are using, you know, whatever coding agent on your team and the next team over or even the next person over is using a different one, it's not going to be a big difference. It's totally fine. You can pick up one day and one the next day. So if your company says, oh, we're done with X and you have to all use Y, everybody's just going to shrug. And it's, you know, I sort of think of it as sort of like video platforms that way. So like at the beginning of the pandemic, there were a whole bunch of people who tried to put out video platforms and say, oh, yeah, this is going to be the video platform. And, you know, Zoom was suddenly, you know, tip of everybody's tongue. And then that market lead kind of evaporated a little bit. I mean, yes, you know, Zoom is still big. Lots of people still use it. It may even be the market leader. I'm not up on that market. But I do know that there's a whole bunch of other companies that have been able to say, you know, we can get video platforms from anybody. It's more of a commodity than that. And I think that the struggle with coding agents is that they're in that category. And right now, there's no real incentive to use one versus the other. If they were able to actually introduce those network effects and make it so that if you're using X platform, the X coding platform, and your team member is using X coding platform, that you are able to work together better, then this starts having being a different story. But I haven't actually seen them solve that problem yet.
Yeah. Maren, do you want to have the final word here? And I think the only other thing I'll throw in is it's possible that OpenAI may be late, but still good, because we sometimes forget it's still the much bigger company relative to Anthropic. Can they marshal their resources is a big question, but curious about what you think.
Yeah, I mean, just from the actual practitioner perspective, the cost of switching, as Olivia says, is so low. I'm like, you know, you build something with Claude Code and it's making MCP calls and it's using some skills that you've built. I just markdown files. All of this stuff transfers over to Codex and you can use OpenAI's model to do the same thing. In fact, I've had several situations where I was building an application with Claude Code, ran out of tokens, and I still had some tokens left with OpenAI
exactly.
and Codex. So I just pointed the Codex agent at the GitHub repo and it just read the code, picked up where I left off and continued and finished the work. So these things are completely interchangeable, kind of by design at the minute. So yeah, I would say it's absolutely not too late.
Well, that's another one where I'm going to end with, we're going to have to keep an eye on it and see what happens, as it is with all these stories on MOE. Marve, Martin, Olivia, thank you for joining us. This is a great panel. I hope you're all back on soon. And that's all the time that we have for today. Thanks for joining, listeners. And if you enjoyed what you heard, you can get us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and podcast platforms everywhere. And we'll see you next week on Mixture of Experts.